There's a different kind of loss happening in parallel with the security vulnerabilities and infrastructure bugs, and I want to spend some time on it, because it surfaced across several HN stories today in a way that felt thematically connected. The 9PBS versus Iron Mountain lawsuit. The Link Rot study tracking 657,607 URLs. The Library of Ashurbanipal essay. And Donkey. Bass turning 45 are all, at their core, about institutional memory and what happens when the stewards of the past fail in their custody role.
The 9PBS and Iron Mountain story is the one that should make anyone in media, archiving, or public broadcasting genuinely alarmed. PBS affiliates have long-term agreements with Iron Mountain, one of the dominant records and data management companies, to store their archival content. The lawsuit alleges that Iron Mountain has blocked 9PBS from accessing their own archive data, apparently as a dispute over contract terms or fees. The 320 points and 184 comments reflect how inflammatory the facts are. A public broadcasting organization being held hostage from its own archive.
Iron Mountain's business model is predicated on long-term custody of data that organizations can't or don't want to manage themselves. When that custody relationship becomes adversarial, when access is blocked as a negotiating tactic, it exposes a structural fragility in how institutions have outsourced their institutional memory. This isn't a technology failure. It's a governance and contractual failure. But the practical effect is the same. Decades of broadcast journalism and public media content may be inaccessible or at risk.
The Link Rot study is the ambient version of this problem, not a single catastrophic failure, but a slow, continuous decay. The researchers followed 657,607 links and found that a substantial fraction are dead, redirected to unrelated content, or returning errors. The web's founding assumption was that URLs are stable identifiers, but in practice, they're pointers to hosting agreements, domain registrations, and organizational continuity, all of which degrade over time.
194 points and 185 comments. The comment ratio is almost 1:1, which tells you this story generated strong reactions. The comments include archivists, researchers, journalists, and developers who have all personally encountered the problem of citing something that no longer exists. The Internet Archive's Wayback Machine comes up repeatedly as the partial mitigation, but several commenters make the point that the Wayback Machine itself is a single point of failure for the collective memory of the web.
And then Donkey. Bass, at 45 years old, 246 points and 112 comments, is the celebratory version of this same theme. Bill Gates and Neil Conzen wrote 131 lines of BASIC that shipped with the original IBM PC and gave an entire generation their first experience of computer gaming. The fact that it runs in a browser today, that the source is preserved, that people can still read the code and understand what it does, that's not automatic. That required deliberate preservation work.
The Library of Ashurbanipal essay from History Today connects all of this to the longest time horizon. Ashurbanipal, the Assyrian king, assembled a library of cuneiform tablets in the 7th century BCE specifically because he believed knowledge should be preserved systematically. Many of those tablets survived because clay baked in the fire that destroyed the library became more durable, not less. The HN comment thread made the pointed observation that some of our most robust digital archives today have survived not because of careful stewardship, but because of accidental redundancy, mirrors, copies, caches that nobody intended as archives.
The Hello Me. It's been a while personal essay, 243 points and 134 comments, fits here too. It's a developer returning to old code or writing after a long gap and reckoning with who they were when they wrote it. The HN community responded warmly, with many commenters sharing their own experiences of finding old projects or blog posts and feeling that discontinuity of self. That's the personal scale version of institutional memory, the continuity between past and present versions of ourselves.
And blog about things you don't understand yet. 116 points and 34 comments. is Sean Godek's argument that writing in public about areas of active confusion is more valuable than waiting until you're an expert. The connection to the archiving theme is that these personal records of learning, messy, uncertain, process-oriented, are exactly what link rot is destroying. The web we're losing isn't the polished final product. It's the working notes.
There's also the What an Improv Stage Can Teach You About Leading Cross-Cultural Teams in Tokyo piece, which sounds like a management blog post, but is actually making a genuinely interesting argument about how improvisational, yes, and framing translates into a very different meaning in Japanese professional culture, where consensus building has different norms and pacing. The author runs a developer community in Tokyo, and the specific examples are concrete and useful. Only 16 points and 3 comments, probably underseen, but worth reading for anyone managing distributed international teams.
Now I want to shift to something we try to do at least once per episode, which is genuinely pressure test one of the confident claims floating through today's stories. The claim I want to examine is the one baked into the I Model Race segment, that inference speed improvements like GPT-5. 6 Sol ultra-fast on Cerebra's hardware will translate into proportional productivity gains for knowledge workers.
This is worth pushing on. The confident version of the claim is, latency is the bottleneck for AI-assisted workflows. Reduce latency, get proportional productivity gains. The Cerebra's positioning depends on this being true.
So what would need to be true for the opposite to hold? The counterargument is that, for most knowledge work tasks, the bottleneck is not token generation speed, but human comprehension and evaluation time. If a model generates a 2,000-word analysis in 4 seconds versus 40 seconds, but the human still needs 12 minutes to read and assess it, the 10x speed improvement produces almost no change in the workflow's cycle time.
The Jeffrey Litt essay is actually the best articulation of this counterargument. He's saying understanding is the new bottleneck precisely because generation speed has outpaced comprehension capacity. If that's right, then the infrastructure investment in faster inference is solving for the wrong constraint. The value wouldn't show up in knowledge work. It might show up in agentic loops where models are calling other models, and the human isn't in the critical path for every step.
That's an important distinction. For agent orchestration, automated pipelines where models make sequential calls without waiting for human review at each step, faster inference does compound directly into faster overall pipeline execution. The productivity gain is real, just for a narrower set of use cases than the marketing suggests.
The assumption that could be wrong is that agentic use cases will come to dominate AI deployment faster than current enterprise adoption patterns suggest. If enterprises remain in a largely human-in-the-loop posture for the next 2 to 3 years, which the OpenAI organizational usage data suggests is likely, then ultra-fast inference is a premium feature that most customers aren't yet structured to capture value from.
So what's the signal to watch? If the Cerebra's OpenAI partnership is right about the demand, you'd expect to see enterprise AI spending shift toward latency-sensitive use cases. Real-time customer service, live code completion at the function level, autonomous research agents running overnight. If Litt's bottleneck argument holds, you'd expect the premium on ultra-fast inference to compress, and the value would flow instead to evaluation tooling, human AI interface design, and output review workflows. Watch which of those product categories attracts investment over the next 6 months.